Welcome to Wisdom Personified, Conversations with Dudumsomi, a passionate and relentless pursuit of exploring how individuals use good judgment in everyday life, both in their personal and professional lives. Nozicelo Ngcobo is our wise guest for today's episode of Wisdom Personified, Conversations with Dudumsomi. She believes that it is better to control your destiny rather than to be responding to things and always being reactive. Her present role is Director, Public Affairs, Communications and Sustainability at Coca-Cola Beverages South Africa. Nozicelo is a certified director with the Institute of Directors South Africa. She currently serves on numerous boards as an ordinary member, vice chairperson, and chairperson. Nozicelo is an avid reader and a lover of ancient cultures and civilizations. Thank you for finally making time for this conversation.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it.
Yay! I mean, this is the thing about having intelligent humans in your life that you can just call upon, because wisdom is everywhere in my life. But what gives your life meaning?
You know, it's a lot of things. It's a walk in nature. It's peace. It's achievement. And, you know, it's beyond the material things that one may have achieved or the accolades that one may achieve. So for me, meaning is really about that peace, but also the ability to help others, the ability to pay it forward. So that's what I define as meaning in my life.
Mm.
And it's all those are things I pursue quite deliberately in my old age.
Old age? Wow. Don't know about that. The one thing we know about you is that you're a dog lover.
Oh, yes. Yes.
What are your dog's names for one? Let us acknowledge them. And what are their breeds?
So my tribe, I've got four members in my tribe.
Mm-hmm.
There is Mila.
Yeah.
Number one. Number two is Bella.
Mm-hmm.
Number three is Blue. And my baby is Rio.
Okay.
And they're all Rottweilers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
So collectively, there's like 150 kg of just energy running around the house. So the house is dog-proof.
Yes.
So that, you know, it's their castle. It's their palace. It must work for them.
Oh,
so,
my.
Yeah. And we all love it.
In my next life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I must be Nozicelo's dog.
That's what I was saying to my niece, that in my next lifetime, I want to come back as them, and I'm going to find me.
Find you.
You know,
to treat them like
I wouldn't have it any other way. I wouldn't have it any other way.
What is the most surprising wisdom you have learned from your dogs, though?
Dogs are very forgiving, you know, and they are very loyal.
Mm.
And their love is unconditional.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter what kind of day you've had, what challenges you're facing. You open the gate and they just come at you with this amazing amount of love. I mean, you can shout at the dog, 2 seconds later, they are back at you.
Wagging their tail.
Exactly. So loyalty, unconditional love, and just the ability to forgive.
Yeah, and we could all use that in our lives. So, are you comfortable talking about your mom?
Yes, yes, of course.
What lesson, at least one lesson you have learned from your mom that you hold dear to this day?
This too shall pass.
Mm. Mm.
You know, we grew up being very ambitious in terms of our careers, wanting to fix things now and today, and not taking time to step back and listen to the inner wisdom, listen to your higher self, your God, your ancestor, whoever you believe in. And the answers are in the silence. So being still and understanding that this too shall pass,
mm-hmm.
is one of the biggest lessons I got from her.
Mm. It's like she's speaking. Yesterday, we had a session with the, because I have a mentorship program,
mm.
Was our leadership mentoring journey.
Mm.
And that's exactly what I was saying, that many of us haven't really had time to know our inner voice, because we don't really have those silent moments. and we don't give it to ourselves. So you don't really know if your ideas are your ideas and your thoughts are your thoughts. That's a good way to remember her.
But the beauty is life has a way of forcing you into that space. My moment was about 10 years ago where my body just shut down. I was in ICU. The doctors didn't know what was wrong with me. And it was just stress, you know, hard work, moving on, running all the time. So for a month, I just stopped. My body just stopped, you know. And to think that beyond that process as well, I actually moved even higher in my career. Mm. So I needed a month to slow down and stop. And also have a conversation with myself. Like,
and rest.
No, Zicelo, where are we? Is this what we want ourselves? So, yeah.
Were you unconscious?
I can only remember 4 times I was conscious in the month. The rest of the time, I don't remember anything.
You didn't get into the other realm?
No. No. Because if I had, I would have sought Rumi out. And Rumi and I were going to have some few conversations about life. So I was still on this side of
it. On this side, yeah. So you didn't go that way. Okay.
No.
And but it is an interesting, like a month of rest that your body really needed. Mm. Wow. I'm sure at that time it didn't look like a blessing.
Oh, no. But now it wasn't. I mean,
now you like reflecting and think, wow.
Yeah. I mean, the conversations I had with my brother at the time, because I was in between jobs, I had resigned from one company and ready to start in a new company. And it was 28 December, and I just shut down. I was about to start a new job on the 1st of January. And there I was phoning HR, phoning my new line manager. I wasn't phoning. I was asking my brother, have you called them? I'll be there before the 8th, before the 10th, before the 15th. And the surgeon said, nah, just chill. Just chill. You're not going anywhere.
The universe has other plans.
Yeah. So, that also passed.
Wow.
Everything passes.
Huh. Mm. That's something. The one thing about you, you are a lover of ancient cultures and civilizations.
Yes.
What is your most favorite civilization and what was the main factor that contributed to its decline?
Listen, I can't say I have one.
Yeah.
They're all fascinating. You know, everybody knows about ancient Egypt and the fact that we have not even uncovered everything about them. The Mayans, we all know about the Mayans and the introduction of the calendar.
The 2012.
Yes, the 2012. Thought. Yes, that was the end. But for me, the most fascinating is the Moors.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all from Africa and they ruled Spain for 800 years. And they introduced chemistry, astrology, mathematics, libraries in Spain. And they also promoted a lot of trade.
Yeah.
So, and this was in 700 BC. Astrology, 700 BC.
And Africans could use this knowledge to empower themselves and know that we have done this before.
Exactly. So for me, it's just that curiosity that what was here before, but also what am I leaving behind? Mm. So that in 5052 or 5054, someone will say, oh, there were two ladies. One was wearing orange. We saw a flimsy video. They were talking about weird stuff.
Yeah.
So, I'm always curious about what we can learn from those ancient civilizations.
Have you been to Spain?
No, not yet.
You have to go and see.
Not yet.
Actually, last time I didn't focus on that. I think I will look at them more closely.
Mm.
Okay, that's interesting. When was the last time you felt truly vulnerable and how did you handle that moment?
It was in March this year where I also had to slow down, 10 years later.
Sure.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so now we have to start counting every 10 years.
Every 10 years I need a break.
Yeah.
So I went in for an elective procedure on my right shoulder and, it was to fix a minor bone thing on my shoulder, But when they opened me up, the tendon was out of work. This was out of work, so they had to fix me. So when I woke up, I had to spend 7 weeks in a sling. So that loss of independence, it forces you to sit down and say, okay, Dieno Zicelo, where are we? What is the next step? And the loss of independence was the biggest challenge for me, you know, given my personality, given everything that I am, given everything that I'm not. But I had to rely on my niece for basic stuff, you know, personal grooming, things like that. But you just surrender to it. And I was not the best patient. But one thing that I learned from that experience is to accept help.
Yeah. Independent people have a very tough time accepting help.
I was giving this poor child, you know, headache because I was this person. So I just said, you know what? Let's do this your way. Surrendered.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was the last time. Yeah, this year, March. So I was out of action for 12 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah, 7 weeks in a sling. Wow. Another 4 or 5 weeks physio, and I will fully recover in November. It takes 36 weeks to fully recover.
Okay.
So, yeah.
You, ma'am. Hi, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, listen, I've learned this lesson this lifetime. You know, in the next, 10 years from now, I'll be probably, skydiving somewhere because I've learned to take it easy between then and now.
Yeah. Actually, there was a time where a friend of mine were reflecting on this very same thing about about asking for help because the independence.
And receiving it and accepting it.
I said to her, I think it's arrogance. When we think we can do everything and other people don't have the ability to do better or help us in any way is arrogance. So we have to train that muscle in ourselves.
Yeah.
And it starts like, you know, can you take me to the airport? Which is something
true.
I would, it's, you know, just start true. With small things.
Yes. And, but also it's childhood trauma.
Yeah.
Where the people we're dependent on were never there for us. So you learn to do everything for yourself.
We were boarding school girls.
I know.
So we did everything for ourselves. So that's where it comes from. Like you just had to do things for yourself. Yeah. But that's a great lesson. I hope people are listening in terms of what is it that we're trying to learn in this journey ours in this life. And all of us will encounter those many situations where we learn.
Absolutely.
You say that challenges that arise from humanity is one of the most important skills one needs as a leader. What do you mean?
Listen, technology is predictable. Science, well, not quite predictable, but, you know, science is science. But when it comes to human beings, there's no formula, there is no handbook. You may have one of your best stars in the team coming in, and the child is sick, and then they just throws them completely. So for me, mastering that level of connectedness as a leader and managing your team from that humanity is it not only challenging, but also the best way to get the best out of your team. You know, we do say we're leading award-winning teams, high-performing teams, but it's people with lives, with challenges, with pasts, dreams, ambitions. And if we can't manage all of that together and holistically and aligning or helping them align those to their greater purpose, nothing else we do matters. So if you master that, then you're a brilliant leader. The rest will take care of itself.
I suppose if we're going to keep calling people human resources or human capital,
exactly,
we forget that the human part is most important.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So one of your roles in this life, we shall say Director of Public Affairs, Communications and Sustainability at Coca-Cola Beverages of South Africa. What does that role entail?
I know it's a mouthful, but primarily we are the conscience of the business. So it's about earning the social license to trade. It goes beyond employing people. It goes beyond contributing to the company GDP. But it's all about it goes beyond reputation. It's about, also goes beyond complying to the laws of the land. It's about creating shared values. creating shared value with society, with regulators, with communities and all of that. And creating shared value means a lot of things for different companies.
Yeah.
But in essence, the company can't be successful and be profitable without taking the communities along with them. So mining companies have mastered that, if you look at the environment. And at Coca-Cola, we've got three Ps. It's the people, it's the planet, and it's the products.
Mm.
Nothing we do on each of those things must impact the other negatively. And it's a tricky balance, but if the support is there from the top,
yeah,
and it's embedded in the culture of the business, then it's easy.
Mm.
So that's what I do. You know, if, for example, the company wants to launch a new product, do we have the water? Do we have sugar alternatives? Do we have carbonation alternatives? Are we going to market it to young people? Are you aware of obesity? Are you going to be transporting it with trucks that are carbon neutral?
Sure.
And so we look at the entire value chain and make sure that the responsibility is not just on one element, but across the value chain. Mm-hmm. So that's what I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no day that's the same as the other, eh?
Of course not. Of course not. I mean, and that's where the fun is, or the challenge is, because, you know, we have a recent issue where a political party wants to have conversation with us on something that we don't believe impacts them or us for that matter. But we do need to open the door, sit down and have a conversation, agree to disagree,
yeah,
or at least have a point of view that says, listen, we want the same things, but we're going about them the different ways.
Yeah.
But ultimately, we're all going to get the same thing.
So you just have to respect every stakeholder,
yeah,
just like receive them.
Yes, ultimately. But also, it doesn't mean you need to bend backwards,
yeah,
for everyone.
Mm.
And I think having the courage to stand by that which you believe in as a company and be firm and be unapologetic and have enough people to support you in that position also helps.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's what I do.
Fine balance. So you almost kind of went there, but not quite. What is the difference then between a social license to operate and legal compliance?
So legal compliance is you have to abide by the law. So if government says you can only have so much sugar on your beverages, that is measurable, it's tested, you know that you can only put 4 grams of sugar per 100 mils of Coke, for example.
Yeah.
There's no two ways about it. It's not 3.5 or 4.1 grams. It's just,
yeah,
4 grams.
Yeah.
So that's straightforward. But the social license to trade is to understand why we got to that position. Is it poor nutrition? Is it healthy or unhealthy choices? Is it obesity in young children? While we all appreciate that we don't get fat from drinking a can of Coke, we do understand that in South Africa, nutrition is a big problem. So how do we work with communities, health practitioners to promote healthy nutrition? Because sometimes it's not just about what you drink, but it's also about what you eat.
Mm.
So do we have the right fast foods menu? Do we have, even in our portfolio, do we have enough products that are zero sugar? Do we have enough water, you know, in our portfolio so that we give consumers a choice?
Mm.
And it goes beyond that, but the label, you know, is there enough consumer information in the label so that when you open that can of appetizer, you know exactly how much you're drinking and how much is in it.
Mm.
So social license to trade is all of those things. But also, how then do we respond to the problems or challenges that our countries face?
Yeah.
Economic inclusion, social transformation, empowerment of women, young people, and all of those things. Are we represented in the right forums to bring change in that regard? Because, you know, as Coca-Cola, we have set aside a percentage of our NPAT, net profits after tax, back to communities. It's standard, it's given, and our focus is on economic inclusion,
yeah,
in any form that it takes.
Mm. It's quite comprehensive, huh?
Mm.
How is the beverage industry in general addressing water usage and conservation in the production process?
So let me start with the second part of your question. The conservation in the production process, we've sort of mastered that process where for every liter of beverage that we produce, we use a liter of water. So, I mean, the technology is there to recycle grey water for pollution facilities, et cetera, et cetera. So we've really gone to that point where for every liter that we produce, we spend a liter of water. So that's neutral, pretty much. Outside the walls, we work a lot with environmental groups to replenish water, i.e. we look at source rivers that serve the dams. And if there's foreign vegetation, we work with NGOs to clear those as well. And the most recent successful project we had was the Gqeberha Day Zero, where the dams were very, very low and the rains were not coming. So we partnered with a company, an NGO that worked with women and gave them jobs to clear the rivers that fed into the main dam.
Yeah.
And that's why there was no Day Zero in Gqeberha. So we do have our head of sustainability, the sustainability team that looks at all those opportunities that is sometimes the replenish may be beyond the walls or inside the factory, but it's how then do we make sure that there's enough water running around. Mm-hmm. But also, and we've replenished just over 1.5 billion liters last year. Our target this year is about 2 billion liters, and we are already at 1.8 billion liters of replenish.
So you're going to meet your target.
Yes, we're going to meet our target. So, yeah. But also for communities, we've pioneered a solar-powered borehole system in communities, in urban communities. We call this Cokeville. There's water underground, and we do appreciate that municipalities have problems. Like, I woke up this morning, there was no water.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to run to my brother's house for a shower. And there's enough water underground, and municipalities are struggling. We have maintenance rainwater. I'm sure you've all experienced it, water outages. So with these solar-powered boreholes, they're quite decent, as in, you know, It's solar power. It filters the water from the ground. It stores it in a tank, and you can access it through opening a tap.
Mm.
So we've donated about 800 million liters of water.
Wow!
Through the boreholes.
There's so many.
So we're looking for opportunities, because when there's no water, that's it. It's game over for us.
Yeah.
So it is a KPI, not just my KPI. It's my MD's KPI.
Yeah.
So it sits in all the right people's KPIs.
Wow.
Yeah.
So now that you're just talking things technology related, how is technology being used to improve sustainability practices in the beverage industry? You've already kind of mentioned, yes, like the solar. Any other?
So it's not just in the support of the initiatives and the project, but also it's in the measurement. The biggest challenge we have in the ESG space is greenwashing, where people claim things that have not happened. Yeah. So technology allows us also to measure and quantify and report.
Yeah.
So when I say 1.8 billion liters, there's a meter and there's an independent group that is telling me, it's not me telling myself that it's 1.8 billion liters.
Because that's when we start saying,
yeah. So it's a verification agency that will tell us that this system, that project has replenished X number of. So the technology allows us to remain honest and true in our mission.
Yeah. Mm. Wow. What is the most significant risk to the social license to operate in your industry, and how do you mitigate against it?
So there are so many. It's difficult to choose one. But, I mean, if you look at us as a beverage sector, you know, unemployment will always be a challenge, and it's not unique to us. Water shortages is a problem, because there will come a time when government must decide who gets the water. Is it Coca-Cola or is it the community? Mm. So those are the risks that we are working with partners, social partners, to mitigate. We've spoken about unemployment, water, sugar is a big challenge as well. And carbon emissions. We have a big fleet of trucks, over 1,000 trucks. So the fact that we don't have or at least as a country, we're still working towards a solid rail system. It becomes a challenge because then more and more trucks are on the roads. So again, we still have conversations with the Minister of Transport and other role players to say, how do we revive Transnet, the rail network? And because it's not just for Coca-Cola, it's not just for Unilever,
other products,
it's not just for FMCG. We need all these trucks out of the road so that, you know, cargo moves through rail. So,
God, we do miss a vibrant rail infrastructure.
I mean, the recent rugby match was just proof of how beautiful rail is if we get it to work.
Yeah.
But beyond that, so many towns have died. If you look at DR, if you look at some of the towns in the Eastern Cape, because the rail does not travel through Natal Midlands, because the rail. So if you fix that, you're not just taking trucks off the road, but you're resuscitating so many economies and communities and so forth.
Why are we not doing it? How do you communicate the importance of the social license to operate to your internal stakeholders, such as employees and fellow executives?
It's probably one of the easiest things to do because most South Africans in 2024 certainly are aware of our past, and we all have a common desire to fix whatever has happened. But also we are aware of the challenges of the last 30 years, and we all have a desire to fix the challenges, i.e. economic inclusion, women empowerment, empowerment of young people, but also empowerment of young businesses, because that's where employment is going to take place. Young companies, you know, the bottom of the pyramid. So it's for us, it's very, very easy. There's various platforms where we map people to causes that they are interested in. So our Mandela Day, we don't go paint schools generally or do gardens. I mean, July is not a right time to plant anything, but we try, we join forces with a company called For Good, where they have a list of NGOs. So as an employee, you sign up through the company and you choose your own NGO. It could be anything. You know, if you are good at maths and there's an NGO that does maths tutoring, then you sign up and you work with them. The company will give you time off for those services, and where possible, will match any financial requirements. So the financial requirement is not as open because, you know, they will never have enough budget. We have 8,000 employees.
So you can imagine everybody watching.
So for me, I've not had a challenge in mobilizing employees to do anything about the social license to trade. But when it comes to people doing the work, i.e., how do I save water? How do I manage my time? How do I, you know, manage my consumption? How do I manage my waste and all of those things? So it's also about mobilization and making sure that people understand recycling, usage of
changing
water,
your mindset,
changing of mindsets. But also we try to expose employees to all these platforms as well so that they fully understand and they can engage with the relevant platforms. So it's probably the easiest part of my job.
Assuming we're all that good.
Yeah.
Good human beings. Has the sugar tax since 2018 being effective in encouraging the reduction of the sugar content in products and in discouraging consumers from purchasing sugary drinks?
That's a very controversial question. I don't know if I can answer it without getting myself into trouble. Depending who you speak to, the answer is yes and no. There are NGOs who feel that there has been a big reduction in volume because of how expensive beverages are. There are many researchers that have said the consumers have switched to sweetened beverages. We have role players that said we have not seen a reduction in our volumes. So one thing that we all agree on is the sugar tax has hit the sugar industry, i.e. the sugar farmers, the millers, quite hard. And there's been a loss of just over 26,000 jobs since 2018. But also the challenge we're facing that if sugar is bad, you must tax everything with sugar, not just cold drinks. Right now, the sugar tax only applies to soft drinks.
Not sweets or anything.
Not candy, not sugar, not chocolate, not cereal, not yogurt. So are we generating revenue or are we trying to fight opposites?
Or are you just the easiest target?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
A lot of things to think about.
Absolutely. But our job is regulatory or public affairs. It's to engage with regulators and say, what problems are we solving? What is the best way to solve those problems? Yes, it's easy to tax five companies.
Mm.
But we also know that they're only collecting 2 billion rand from us and they're spending, when I say they, tax, finance, treasure.
Yeah.
They are collecting 2 billion rand from five companies and they're spending 8 billion rand to collect those taxes. So what are we trying to achieve? One thing that we agree on is we do need to give consumers a choice. Consumers need to know what they're putting in their mouths. Consumers need to know how what they eat, their lifestyles are impacting their health, definitely. And just like with alcohol, consumers must be empowered with enough information to make the right choices. And if you talk about childhood obesity, we don't think a four-year-old goes to a Spaza and buys a Fanta Orange.
Mm.
It's the parent. So how then do we empower parents to make the right choices for their children? And also, you know, you could eat pap and bread and fat cook and acha and all those divine things and drink water. Those things are not healthy either. They can, you know, it's calorie intake and calorie output. So that's why we need to say the conversation that if we want a healthy society, it's not about the cold drink. It's bigger and broader than that.
Yeah. You are really bringing a lot of ethical issues,
which
we could delve into.
Yeah.
But I hope somebody who is doing their master's or doctorate can do research on this subject. I think it's such an important topic that to delve into if we were still doing our MBA.
No, absolutely. I think for me, part of the interest in my job is that there are no clear answers and the process is not linear.
Yeah.
Which then challenges all of us to think outside the box, to think broader, and also give ourselves time to solve these problems. I always maintain that we all want the same things. As a business, we want healthy consumers to buy our product for the next 20 years. I don't want to kill you, you know, and in the next 2 years, definitely not. We want healthy consumers who will continue to be, you know, buying our products, using our services, because that's also part of sustainability and longevity.
Yeah. What is the one thing you would say to persuade your CEO that collaborating with a competitor makes good business sense?
I hope the Department of Trade and Industry is not listening to me. Listen, as
we're not talking in that sense.
No, we're not talking that. Listen, our companies or our industry, you know, there's always a risk of collusion and anti-competitive behavior. But we have found that in the space that I work in, i.e. regulatory affairs, public policy, sustainability, we all want the same things. And not one company can do everything that needs to be done.
Yes.
So let's take water, for example, because we've already been speaking about water. It doesn't help for Coca-Cola to reserve water while SAB, for example, is not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also noticed that generally governments don't want to speak to individual companies. They want to speak to a collective.
Yeah.
And this is why I take my role as a chairperson of BEVSA quite seriously, because it's not just about my business, but it's the entire beverages sector.
Yeah.
So, and also how do we create shared value? How do we create healthy societies, communities, empowered economically? And we find that there are many, many opportunities to collaborate, the foundations and the CSI programs. So, those conversations are easier with each year, mainly because we can prove value. We can demonstrate value back to the business that if we do it this way, this is the benefit, not just for the company, but for the industry.
You know, there's somebody listening who's young and thinking, if I'm going to be doing that kind of job, what do I do? Because, I mean, 10 years ago, you didn't think that is a career. Yeah. So I know you did a BCom, MBA and other things.
Yeah.
What would you suggest to that young person?
I don't have a clear answer. These things are not linear because there is no degree called corporate affairs, you know, but the profession is growing. It started in the political area where a lot of lobbyists and advocates were lobbying for particular positions to help their parties. But we've realized that there's a very profound place where geopolitics impact economies. And my entry was because I did strategy, business strategy. So once you unpack business strategy, you realize that it's not just about supply, demand. It's also not just about the SWOT analysis, the macro. Actually, there are laws that are coming in that are impacting. So literally, that's how I evolved into the role. So, you know, for me, one of the best entry points is business strategy. But also I've noticed that people who are doing, who are chartered environmentalists, your people that do sustainability, people that do communications, because if you look at my portfolio, I run a team of specialists. You know, I've got lawyers, I've got economists, I've got environmentalists, I've got PR people. And collectively, that's the role that we play. So, yeah.
People should just continuously learn. And you see and that evolve. Careers kind of, because sometimes, especially when we talk AI, everybody starts panicking, that there will be more careers that we don't even know about today.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
How do you maintain personal growth and stay inspired in your career?
My career is not... a typical day, I can never predict what's going to happen. So remaining curious and asking enough questions is what helps me grow and learn every day. 5 years ago, I knew little about sustainability. Now I know sustainability end-to-end for a beverages company, for a tobacco manufacturer, for a beer company, you know. So just remain curious, ask as many questions. And the beautiful thing about our job is it forces us to look 5 years into the future. So when you have to imagine the world 5 years from today, it's amazing the amount of questions that you start asking yourself. And also the things you ask about, you know, your own personal life, that if I have to wake up and it's 2029, how will that world look like? There are no flying cars, I promise you guys. But
yet.
But you just start thinking differently about life and so many things. So, ask as many questions and don't occupy the space. Just ask questions. I ask a lot of questions.
Yeah. Some of us are trekkies. So we envisage a different kind of world.
I know.
Yes. Yeah. So it's just normal to us, all those things that
I
are possible.
I do the Boch.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I know. I love them. I think if I were to join the Boch as a species, I would be happy.
We possibly are in some form, but anyway.
Yeah. Okay, we're digressing.
If you could go back and give your young self one piece of advice, what would it be?
Everything's going to be okay.
Is there a time you thought it wouldn't be?
Of course. That's why you ended up in ICU, because you're fighting and thinking the world is coming to an end. Mm-hmm. You worry about so many things, you know. And I think surrendering. And when I say surrender, it's not to run away from accountability or running away from yourself.
Yeah.
But it's finding that moment where you say, what next? And really, really listening to the answer.
Yeah.
And it may come from the most unlikely sources.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Just always stay open.
Yeah.
So you run a mentorship circle.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still run it?
No, not anymore.
What was it?
It was a very informal platform and something that I'm looking to resuscitate. A very informal platform in like young women where I used to work or where I work, where we speak about anything and nothing. So one of the things that I found at CCPSA, Coca-Cola, is the Lean In campaigns where women were divided into groups and we didn't speak about your career as such, but the individual, are you okay? Are you coping? Where can we help? And they were quite small groups because, you know, privacy and all of those things. It's something that I'd like to resuscitate. Yeah.
Okay. What's the most courageous decision? It's my favorite question you have taken as a human being thus far. What drove you to that decision?
I'm always taking courageous decisions, you know, the will to survive. I think, I really can't think of one. I don't know if how open I should be in this platform.
Very open.
I made a decision not to have children because when I was still of childbearing age, I didn't live in the world where I want to bring another soul. So I just made that decision that, nah, my child can never go through this.
And you've been okay with that?
No, Mom, I'm very okay with this. I mean, between my sister, my family and my friends, I've got 31 godsons, nephews and nieces. So I'm busy. I'm very busy. I'm broke. You know, I just spent money I didn't have yesterday for my, you know, for my nephew. So I'm not complaining.
You're covered.
I'm covered.
Yeah.
It's a tribe.
It is interesting, though, that not having children is seen as courageous because it should be a decision we're able to make and not feel like, you know, my mother, sorry, mommy, you still don't have a great job. You have Snoopy, my dog. But yeah,
no, where we come
that
from,
a female still has to kind of feel like that decision is like, but now we've come across a lot. And this world, not that many of us are making that reason the reason why we don't have kids, but you know.
Yeah.
But let's hope we'll have a world one time where a woman doesn't have to. It's just one of the decisions we make.
True.
Yeah. What is a belief or habit you've had to unlearn, and how did you, what process did you go through to change whatever it was?
Finding the answer right now, today, here, this moment, I just had to stop doing that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know what, the answer will come when the answer is supposed to come, and it's okay.
The impatience gene.
Yeah.
And now you're like, do you meditate at all?
Absolutely. Every day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's why I'm so calm. I think. No, I think also with growing up and facing the challenges, you learn to look outside yourself for answers. And when you get that answer, it says go inwards. Mm. So you leave yourself to go find an answer. But then, you know, the path tells you to come back within yourself.
Yeah.
So, I in my 30s, I was very impatient, very impatient.
When we were doing our MBA.
Yeah. So
type A's everywhere.
Yeah. So, I've just had to.
As my friend must say, "Wusa." Do you still have things on your bucket list that you still want to just share one?
Oh, yes, travel.
Yeah,
I've gone through 4 passports. I'm on my 5th.
Yeah.
And it's empty.
Yeah.
I need to fill it.
Which country?
Take
on
it.
On the continent.
I want to spend time in Ghana.
Mm-hmm.
I want to spend time in Ghana. It's beautiful. People are beautiful. I want to go to Ghana.
I know.
Yeah.
My next birthday is going to be there.
Oh, lovely.
No, I've been there, I think, twice now, but my next birthday. I shall not say when. And then just in wrapping up, we can chat forever.
True.
Really. there's a lot that I'll still want to pick in that head of yours.
But can't wait.
But there is something that you said. You like planning. You're like a planner. Is that, do you plan or are you a spontaneous person?
I hate surprises.
Yeah.
I think it goes with my type A personality.
Yeah.
I used to plan ad nauseam, but that also brought me trouble.
Yeah.
I'm not comfortable with chaos. So, yes, I do plan. I do plan. I'm not as fixated on it as I used to be, but I do plan. Yeah. I know exactly what's going to happen in my life on the 31st of October. I know.
Yeah. And you hope it is that way. Bless you.
Well, it's a plan. But I'm also flexible that it can change.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be in Durban on the 31st of October. Yeah. So not September of October. I'll be in Durban.
Yeah. Okay. It's my mother's month. My mother's born 2nd of October. My dad 11th. So it is.
My mom 15th October.
Oh, the Libras in our family. Okay. Yes. That explains us. I tell people, have parents that are Libras, you will be very much a planner.
Yes.
Because those scales.
No, I plan. I don't leave a lot to chance.
Yeah.
But
you've had a good life.
I'm very happy with my life. I'm very happy with where I am. I'm looking forward to the next 20 years of my life.
Yeah.
In 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
I may just make it to 82.
Yeah.
So I'm looking
for 100.
Oh, 100, yeah. So I'm looking forward to it. I think I sort of keep telling my niece that with all the things I've learned, I think I'm in a better space.
Yeah.
And I'll definitely enjoy the next coming 30 years. Absolutely.
So what wisdom would you like to leave us with as we close our lovely conversation?
I mean, I think I've thrown in a few, quite a few, but one last thing that I need to throw in, don't take yourself so seriously. Just enjoy the ride. No one is making it out alive. So just have as much fun as you can.
Yeah.
In everything that you do.
Mm. That one, nobody's making it out alive. But there are some that, like Jonathan, the tortoise and St. Helena Island has been around for a long time. So some of our species, well, not our species, animal species live a long time. Yeah.
But for the rest of us, we're not making it out alive.
Just have fun.
Enjoy the ride. Yeah. Have fun.
Thank you. I'm so happy we finally had this conversation.
No, same here.
Yeah,
I could do another hour, but I'm having so much fun. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. If you have not clicked on the subscribe icon, do so now. Like and share. Let us share wise conversations as much as we share clickbait soundbites. This is an opportunity to spread positivity rather than negativity that drains our energy. Every time you watch or listen to a wise conversation, share it with 5 other people in your network. Until next time, when I have another conversation with a wise and inspirational individual. Wishing you a life filled with love, compassion, and consciousness. Thank you for listening to this episode of Wisdom Personified, Conversations with Dudumsumi. Please also like, follow, and subscribe to our channel and share the wisdom with your friends. I would love it if you could rate and review as well. Wisdom Personified, Conversations with Dudumsumi is also available on YouTube, Facebook Watch, Apple, and Google Podcasts, as well as Spotify. Enjoy the wisdom journey.